president over fluoridate. And they have been successful, or excuse me, they've been unsuccessful at the state level time and time and time again. So part of it, I personally believe, my opinion, it was a political strategy decision. Let's go for Portland. Second, I do believe, and it's interesting upstream because you know, I've been on their website, and I agree with almost virtually everything they're doing, you know, tobacco, whatever, you know, like that. My former organization I worked for just until I retired last year, the Physicians for Social Responsibilities, work with them on projects, I believe. So I think, geez, thumbs up on everything except this. And when you look at it, where a lot of these organizations that you're talking about, where all this comes from is the CDC and the American Dental Association. And Nick, you know a few details about this now since you got that email from me. But I used to believe, too. I used to trust them until I really started studying this issue 5 years ago. And then once I started really studying it, I thought my trust has been betrayed. And I don't use that term lightly. We don't have time to get in the weeds. I'm not gonna. But I'm just saying, from those two agencies, the CDC, Public Health Service, they started out in 1950 promoting this. The Dental Association filed in line, and there have been one organization after another pretty much following the leader. That's the reason, I think. Okay? They're following that. And Sam, your list of local organizations, you're talking about ones that are serving the disadvantaged minority organizations, I think, impressive list, you know, they're, okay, gee, naming one after another, saying they're in favor of fluoridation. I don't believe, I'm quite correct on this, Kim, correct me if I'm not, not one of those organizations has talked to us. Not one of those organizations has received information from the other side, from our side. As far as I know, not one, okay? They've gotten one side of the story. And they look at this big, long list of the Dental Association and the CDC and all of them. They think, well, gee, looks good. I believe our, you look incredulous. It's the power of the list. You know, you look at the list. But
I don't know whether you want me to have discussion with you as we go, or let you finish the discussion.
Let's put it this way. What I know for sure, Kim, I don't think any of those organizations that have signed on as favoring fluoridation have met with us. Is that correct?
We did contact one, and they were actually quite surprised and shocked when they saw the evidence that we provided with them. And I think that they were upset by the fact that they weren't given that information before they took a public stand.
But we haven't met with them, right?
We have not met with them.
We have not met. So I'd like to see where these organizations stand if we actually have the chance, which we did not have.
So you're saying that these organizations are uninformed or misinformed?
I'm saying they've got one side of the story. And they have not. Pardon?
That would be misinformed, wouldn't it?
That
would be underinformed.
Please don't put words in my mouth.
I'm trying to understand the meaning of what you're saying.
That would be, they've gotten one side of the story. They have not heard from us in person on the other side. Those are my words.
I would also like to add to that.
We just do it one at a time?
Yeah.
But I know the folks that lead these organizations, and to be clear, and I'm to be corrected, they organized themselves and came to us.
Okay.
They didn't get organized in any other way. So this, the big conspiracy is these organizations working, I assume, with Upstreet Public Health created a coalition before they approached the city, I think. Is that correct?
So since you asked me a question, I'm going to answer it the way I want. I invited all four of you here to give your points of view. What I don't want to have happen is what appears to be occurring now. It's degenerating. Rick, you and I have met, along with Dr. Wu, and I thought it was a fascinating debate that you had with Dr. Wu and the mayor of Tualatin. Mayor?
Lou Ogden.
Lou Ogden, yes, Lou Ogden. And that's what I want to hear from you.
Okay.
Is make your best case here for everybody to hear. Charlie was correct when I asked her, when I asked you to make the call. I wanted to give you each the amount of time you needed to make your case, but no, I don't want this to turn in, and degenerate into an argument. With all due respect to Mayor Adams and others, make your case, and then we'll move on.
I am going to clarify the record on this big conspiracy. Because the big
that's your word, Sam. That's your word. That's not my word.
The big agenda. I'm quoting the big agenda. The big words. I just want to be really clear and give you an opportunity to respond. And you'll have to forgive me, Commissioner. It's an important issue. That's my experience of the big conspiracy. Is these community-based organizations that are tough as nails on groups like the American Medical Association and other traditional groups, tough as nails as critics of those groups. Came forward to me and said, we want to move on this. And you've explained, and you can now move on, but you've explained you think that they're misinformed by not hearing the whole story or uninformed of your point of view. Either one of those words, fair enough. I wanted to give you an opportunity to get that out, and I just wanted to clarify for you, that's my experience of the big coalition, the big agenda, whatever it is, you how you want to describe it. I think Commissioner Leonard wants you to continue on.
I will. But one response to that, Sam, I would have to question whether they came to you on their own without talking to the pro-fluoridation folks first. Did they just all of a sudden come to you and say, we're really worried about a dental health crisis, we want to fluoridate, without talking to upstream public health? I don't know the answer to that question, but I have to wonder.
No, they were clear that upstream public health was part of going out and reaching out to them.
That's what I
thought.
Just
like
yeah.
You had the opportunity to go out and reach out to them for the past 50 years, too.
Okay. I'd like to move on. In terms of a dental crisis, okay, and I'm leading up because I want to talk about the scientific committee and why we think this date is just not realistic, okay? But the dental crisis, I don't think anybody wants to see kids with bad teeth. I really don't know anybody. I know nobody in our group does, probably nobody in this, you don't, nobody in this room does. But you're probably going to see, you know, tales and pictures of kids with bad teeth. This dental crisis, can I just read one sentence here, or two? This is from a newspaper article. At a time when the dental health of American children has never been better, this city is experiencing an oral health care crisis. City and regional medical officials say tooth decay is the city's number one unmet health care need. Sounds like something right out of here. This is Cincinnati, 2002. Cincinnati have been fluoridated since 1979. Fluoridation has done virtually nothing for Cincinnati. One more. After 9 years and $3 million of adding fluoride, research shows tooth decay hasn't dropped among the poorest of Bexar County's children. It has only increased, up 13% this year, after 9 years and $3 million of adding fluoride. That was San Antonio, 2011. They've been fluoridated since 2002. What has been put out here has been that fluoridation is going to be the panacea. Well, I shouldn't go that far. The fluoridation is the answer, basically, or at least one big answer to this dental health crisis. Well, in city after city, it's not just these two. You can read newspaper articles, Detroit, New York, Boston, go right down the line. The same thing. Cities have been fluoridated for years, in many cases, decades. The same thing. I just want you to know that. Well, I get right to it, just in the interest of time, because I know there's other people that want to. I've got a lot of things that I know what you're going to hear, but, well, just one. What's the matter with Portland? Not Kansas. What's the matter with Portland? What is it with us, anyway? Sam, I think you said, you know, this is not the kind of weird we want to be, right? Okay, that most of the major cities in the country or Florida, what's wrong with us? We're behind, okay? There's nothing wrong with this. 196 countries in the world, 27 fluoridate, 11 for more than half their population. That's it. Okay? The United States has more people drinking fluoridated water than the rest of the world combined. When you look at around the world, you are going to see in Europe, 5 countries out of 48 fluoridate. That's it. Okay? And then you're going to hear the standard answer. Oh, well, they got fluoridated salt. They don't need to fluoridate. Well, 5 countries in Europe have fluoridated salt. And there you go to the grocery store, and it's a consumer choice. You can either buy it or not. Okay? Country after country. Most countries in Europe never fluoridated 6. 6 that used to have stopped as the science has come in. You go to Australia. Queensland has now revoked their law that said there has to be fluoridation, and town after town is lining up to get out of it. Go to Canada. Canada. 5 years ago, 45% of the country was fluoridated. Now, 33%. I'm still trying to get the final figure on this. To the best of my knowledge, one town in Canada since 1999 has actually started fluoridation. There may be more that I don't know about. That's all I can find right now. When you look around the world, as this science keeps coming in, town after town, country after country is saying no because they think it is not safe, it is not effective, and it is not ethical. That's where the rest of the world is going. You want to talk about cities that don't fluoridate? Look at Rome, look at Paris, look at London, look at Berlin, look at Stockholm. There's nothing wrong. There's nothing wrong with Portland. We're right, and I hope we stay right. In terms of this committee, or in terms of the what we like to see in a scientific committee, I studied these. There have been 3 in the country, Natick, Massachusetts, Fort Collins, Colorado, Fairbanks, Alaska. And Randy, you actually said something I agree with, okay? You said a few minutes ago you had 3 months to run a campaign and turn things around, and 3 months was enough time to do that. And I agree with you. Running a political campaign, I wish they were all just 3 months, including the presidential one. Okay? Two things we agree on. Okay. It may stop there, right there, Randy. Okay, so this is where we're going. Okay. When I have gotten the information from these 3 cities, take a look at Natick. Natick, Massachusetts, 1997. This is the shortest amount of time. This is an enormous issue with so many facets to it. This is not a soundbite issue, but it has been made into a soundbite issue. It's complex and it's far-reaching. Natick, 5 scientists on this committee. They took 6 months. 6 months. And interesting way they did it, they asked the proponents and opponents to give them their best shot. This is how they kind of got it down a little bit, to give them their best information on how to do this. But Natick, in terms of who they had, research microbiologist, chemical engineer, a chemist PhD, a chemistry teacher, and a molecular biologist who is a specialist in risk analysis, a very, very impressive group. And what they decided, by the way, in case you're wondering, is that, I'll just quote the sentence here, the Natick Fluoridation Study Committee unanimously and emphatically recommends that the town of Natick not fluoridate the town water supply. These are high-level scientists, mainly in Natick, Massachusetts. 6 months it took them, and that was with a lot of help from the proponents and the opponents. Fort Collins, Colorado, 2003. 16 months. 16 months it took them. Now, this was interesting because the people, the 9 people they had on their committee, they were not all scientists. An ecologist, an environmental toxicologist, they were. 2 doctors, 1 chiropractor, 1 dentist, two water department employees and one veterinarian. Okay? They actually came out more in favor of fluoridation. So there's no guarantee on this. Okay? I would question the people they put on this, frankly, as to how unbiased they were. But the fact remains, this committee came out in a way that I was sorry to see it came out. I would add, this is 2003. This is before the National Academy of Sciences report came out in 2006. And then there was Fairbanks. This was just last year. Fairbanks, it was a little humorous even. Fairbanks was given the charge to try to do this in 5 months. Okay, that's what they thought they could do. It ended up taking them 13 months because that's how extensive this issue is. And the people on this, three chemists, one microbiologist, one physician, and one dentist. This committee voted 5-1 not to fluoridate. Okay? Mainly because of what it's doing, how it could harm little kids, infants. And when they did, their city council took their advice and also voted 5-1 not to fluoridate. So Randy, while you can do a political campaign in 3 months, what I'm suggesting to all of you is that you cannot adequately cover this in the amount of time we have. Realistically, you could not get a group together, even if everything went like clockwork, until February. And then you got February, March, April, before the ballots go out in May. That's 3 months. There is no way in the world you are going to get a thorough examination of this issue in that amount of time. That's why we're asking you, please do not set this date for May of 2013, because it just doesn't work. And I'll just give you a couple issues that have not even come up in any degree at all. What does fluoride do to the fish? What about the salmon? The whole environmental aspect, we never even had time to get to this. And it doesn't have to be a debate. If we want to debate, that's great. We're ready to. The other side usually doesn't want to debate us, I can tell you that. But, you know, what about chronic kidney? What all these issues the National Academy of Sciences raised? What about chronic kidney disease? What about the IQ? What about the financial burden on low-income parents? What about ethics? And by the way, that came up. I happened to have a conversation with one of the scientists in Fairbanks this morning. And what he was telling me about some of the conversations they had, he said, you know what? It keeps coming up about the level, you know, the 0.7 parts per million. He says, you've got to talk about the dose. It's not just the level in the water. It's how much fluoride people are getting. And little babies and kids are getting proportionally a whole lot more fluoride per body weight than people that are older. And this is not getting talked about enough. You've got, and what he also said, a tremendous amount of discussion they had on ethics. How in the world can five people on a city council, and I know you're not the first by any means, how can you assume the power and authority to administer a drug? This is not a nutrient. This is not needed for human health. It is not a water treatment like chlorine to kill the bugs in the water that might make us sick. This is a drug as acknowledged and defined by the FDA. How in the world can you take an authority that our own personal physicians do not have with us to give us a drug without our informed consent? This does not make any sense. I don't care how many cities in the United States have done it. This emperor doesn't have any clothes. Again, I'm happy to answer any questions, but I'd appreciate it if you would look at this and give us time. Give us time. Give an independent group of people the chance to really thoroughly look at this issue. This is a matter way, way beyond dental health. This is about the health of so many other diseases that are affecting human beings. Thank you.
May I just, wanted to request that the website have the link Clean Water Portland. You have upstream, so if you could also include Clean Water Portland in your website, I would really appreciate it.
Thank you all very much for your testimony. All right.
Okay, if we could have the Healthy Teeth Coalition panel, Mel Rader, Alan, please, that's really uncalled for.
Yeah, if there's if you're hissing
Coral, Mary Lou,
and I Henry, catch you, you're out of here.
Philip Wu. Thank you all for coming. Certainly take the time you need, but we do have people that would like to testify, and appreciate you all being here. Start out in whatever order you would like.
Thank you. My name is Mel Rader. I'm the co-director of Upstream Public Health, which is dedicated to improving the health of all Oregonians. It's a registered lobbying entity with the city. I also serve on the Board of Health Share of Oregon, which is the largest CCO, and serves 160,000 Medicaid recipients in the Tri-County area. As you may know, I received a letter on Monday from opponents of fluoridation that suggested we need an independent review to look at the science. Therefore, I wanted to take this opportunity to describe the scientific analysis that has already been completed on water fluoridation. Pew Charitable Trust has found more than 3,000 peer-reviewed articles that have been published on water fluoridation so far. That is a remarkable body of literature. Any review of the literature requires a considerable amount of time and expertise. But we are lucky that there have been at least 14 independent scientific reviews completed so far. Altogether, 232 separate credentialed scientists were involved in these reviews, plus thousands of public comments. Reviews that have been completed in the U.S. include one by the U.S. Public Health Service, one by the Institute of Medicine, by the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, by the Task Force on Community Preventive Services, the Fort Collins Technical Study Group, this was mentioned. There's an independent group of individual scientists, and then the National Academy of Sciences. National Academy of Sciences is an independent nonprofit. According to their mission, the National Research Council, which is housed at the National Academy of Sciences, quote, provides a public service by working outside the framework of government to ensure independent advice on matters of science, technology, and medicine. The National Academy of Sciences has actually done reviews starting in 1951, then in 1977, 1993, 2006, and 2007. All these reviews found that water fluoridation at the right level is safe and effective. I encourage each of the city commissioners to read these reports if they're having trouble falling asleep at night. But if you don't have time to read them, I'll give you the quick summary. Every one of these reports says fluoridation is very effective at reducing cavities by at least 25%. And water fluoridation works better than every option, including brushing your teeth or school fluoride programs. And the second finding is that in 65 years of practice, 3,000 studies, 14 expert review committees, there's no credible evidence of a single negative health effect from optimally fluoridated water. I want to mention the two other studies that were mentioned around Natick and Fairbanks. And what was different about them is they did not assess the questions of whether fluoridation is effective or whether fluoridation is safe. Instead, they made recommendations from a panel about whether to fluoridate or not. Water fluoridated...
Could I interrupt you a second?
Yeah.
You said 65 years. How many studies? What was that last week?
There's been... Pew has identified more than 3,000 peer-reviewed studies. If you go to PubMed, it's actually more than 5,000 studies have been done, but a number of those are not peer-reviewed. Water fluoridated at the right amount has been found to do two things in the body. One, it hardens teeth and makes them resistant to decay. And second, it hardens bones, reducing hip fractures. And that's all it does. In a case you think there's a conspiracy among U.S. research committees, then you can also go to international independent scientific reviews that have been completed, including by York University in Britain, the Australian government's National Health and Medical Research Council, completed in 2007, the New Zealand government's National Fluoridation Information Service Review, which was completed in 2011, and then finally they did an update just 6 months ago. So, and even this review just 6 months ago found the same thing. Fluoridation prevents cavities and it reduces bone fractures when it's added at the right amount, and it doesn't do anything else. Added on top of these expert independent reviews, there are endorsements from all the leading health organizations. 7 U.S. Surgeon Generals in a row have endorsed fluoridation. Surgeon General C. Everett Koop said, quote, "Fluoridation is the single most important commitment a community can make to the oral health of its children and to future generations." On one side, you have all the major health organizations and 14 independent scientific reviews saying fluoridation is the healthy thing to do. On the other side, there is not one major health organization that opposes fluoridation. Not a single one. Let's not call for more science while dismissing the scientists. Let's not commission an independent review while ignoring 14 independent reviews on the table. The scientific community is growing hoarse from speaking over and over on the subject. The only question is whether we will listen to what the scientists are saying. The calls for more science are designed to delay, not deepen our debate. For that reason, I ask you to schedule the vote on fluoride for next year. I am opposed to a scientific review on whether climate change is happening or whether tobacco causes cancer. Similarly, I am opposed to a review by the city about whether fluoride is actually safe and good for your teeth. Let us have an open and fair debate. Opponents of fluoride are putting a confusing measure on the 2014 ballot. The issue of fluoridation is too important to be mucked up by competing initiatives. So let us put the issue on a special election ballot next year and give voters a fair up or down vote. Thank you.
Thank you. Hi, welcome.
Hello, good afternoon. For the record, my name is Alejandro Queral. I'm a program officer with the Northwest Health Foundation. I've also been appointed by the governor to the Public Health Advisory Board, where I serve as vice chair. I am here today to urge you to support to set the referendum on fluoridation of Portland drinking water for May 21st, 2013. Northwest Health Foundation supports an open and inclusive process that leads to community action, and especially so when this action results in a healthier, more equitable community. As elected representatives of the city's residents, you acted decisively in September to give every Portlander, and especially every Portland child, an opportunity to have a life free of the burden of oral disease. The science behind community water fluoridation is settled, as you've heard. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention have set very clear standards based on years of evidence and mounting research that at proper concentrations, fluoridated water is the most effective way to reduce tooth decay and improve everyone's dental health. Yes, we also need education about oral health, regular flossing and brushing, less sugar, and more access to dental providers. But even these things are not enough. As we know, many communities in our city have little or no access to dental care and other resources. Water fluoridation is cost-effective, as it can reduce tooth decay by as much as 25% and lead to overall healthcare savings. In fact, analysis show that for every dollar invested in water fluoridation, about $38 is saved per person per year from decreased need for dental treatment. But most importantly, water fluoridation is an effective way of reducing differences in health status among communities. You may know that more than one in three children in Oregon suffer from tooth decay, which is incidentally 40% more than children in Seattle, where water is fluoridated. But did you know that nearly half of Oregon Latino children suffer from tooth decay, or that African Americans of all ages living in Oregon have substantially higher rates of tooth decay than their white counterparts? Low-income Oregonians are also disproportionately and unfairly affected by tooth decay. For instance, children in households below federal poverty level are 3 to 5 times more likely to have cavities and are more likely to miss more days of school due to painful dental disease. Northwestern Foundation applauds your bold leadership that you demonstrated when you voted back in September to fluoridate Portland's drinking water. By taking this action, you move to implement the single most effective way to reduce or eliminate this unfair and avoidable inequities. Without it in place, it would be difficult to make a straight-faced case that Portland is committed to equity. I believe Portlanders are ready to affirm your decision and are ready to do so now. Opponents would like to stall the process to continue to muddy the waters with dubious claims about the science and, frankly, far-fetched conspiracy theories. Regarding the independent scientific panel, the obvious concern there is that if that scientific panel's conclusions don't jive with what the opponents believe, that panel will be dismissed and the debate will continue, and Portlanders will not have an opportunity to have healthier teeth. Questioning the scientific consensus, even when there is one, is the same tactic others have used to bog down any significant action to curb carbon emissions and avert global climate catastrophe. Don't let this happen here. As a parent of a 2-year-old kid, it is imperative that we don't miss this opportunity to give every child in Portland a chance at a healthier life. Thank you.
And if I could, you're with the Northwest Area, Northwest Health Foundation?
I am a program officer with Northwest Health Foundation, yes.
And do you feel like the position of the Northwest Health Foundation and was an informed decision, or as some of the testimony we heard earlier, it was that you might be misinformed or uninformed on the issue?
The Northwest Health Foundation has conducted its own independent analysis of many of the studies that have been presented. We have searched for other information outside of what's been provided, and we've come to this conclusion independently, and we have been supporting community water fluoridation for over 15 years.
Good afternoon. My name is Mary Lou Henrich, and I spoke with you in September about water fluoridation when I was here speaking as a second-generation Oregonian, a public health nurse and administrator with a career spanning more than 40 years in Portland. But mostly that day, I was here speaking as a grandmother of my 18-month-old granddaughter, Brianna. Brianna wiggled on my lap, and we decided that as she's closer to 2, that she wouldn't come today.
Darn, well, tell her we said hi.
I will tell her. But as I told you in September, I have spent my entire professional career in the field of public health, focusing on improving the health of children and working to reduce health disparities and inequities suffered by most vulnerable low-income residents, as has been described by our previous panelist, Alejandro. I was very proud of your unanimous September vote to move forward quickly with providing this missing nutrient to the Bull Run water system. And now that you are faced with deciding the date for the final vote of the people, I urge you to show that you understand the need to move forward and place this issue on the May 2013 ballot rather than allowing it to be further unnecessary delay. As I have reflected on important public health issues and changes occurring during my career and times when there were tough decisions to be made, and sometimes we waited, we got information, we, you know, perseverated and then moved forward, I remember only too well kind of one of the ones that was key in my career, and that was quite controversial 30 years ago, establishing comprehensive confidential health services in high schools and at Roosevelt High School, and I was the person who was out there in front when we did that. Teen pregnancy and a lack of convenient and affordable health care access to comprehensive care and prevention services were clearly on the rise. A practical option to making effective services more available was to bring these confidential services into the school setting. There was a small but very vocal minority who was not convinced this was a reasonable thing to do. And I remember only too well being called many names and actually being threatened publicly and privately as we moved forward to establish that first school-based health center. We, the public health professionals, prevented the facts and evidence of effectiveness of this strategy that was at that time just beginning in other parts of the country. So it was nowhere as well documented as the fluoride science that you've heard about today. But it was the leadership of Multnomah County Commissioner Gretchen Cafori and the rest of the county commission, along with Portland Public Schools Superintendent Matthew Prophet, that courageously stood up and said, "We can't wait for everyone to agree. We need to get going and do what the evidence says will make a difference in the lives and health of our children and community." That was 1985. And today there are more than a dozen clinics in Multnomah County and in schools, with more than 50 established school-based health centers across the state. And thousands of students and their families are served annually with many conditions and diseases prevented and lives improved every day. So due to the controversy at that time, a period of time was made available for community meetings and input at both Board of County Commissioners and School Board, similarly to what you have been doing. But ultimately, it was the courageous leadership of the County Commission and Portland School District that called the question and allowed that first clinic to open in January 1985, and as they say, the rest is history. I recount this abbreviated version of the school-based health center history to remind us all that while there won't always be total consensus on all issues that affect the health and well-being of individuals and communities, there comes a time when leaders need to weigh the body of evidence, as you heard in September, and you have seen visually and heard about today from Mel, and then make sometimes uncomfortable but necessary decisions that you were elected to make. In many ways, your decision today is easier than the September vote. Let the people speak via the ballot. Delaying the vote until May 2014 won't bring new evidence to the issue. Adding the essential nutrient fluoride to water supplies where it isn't occurring in sufficient amounts, like Bull Run, has been done for many decades in numerous states, cities, and towns across the U.S., and the positive oral effects are well established, as Mr. Rader pointed out. So let the conversation continue for the time between now and May 2013. Then give the residents of Portland the opportunity to make the decision by voting their conscience. Please vote yes to establish May 2013 as the date for this vital vote. And Brianna and I both thank you.
Thank you. Sir?
Good afternoon, Mayor Adams and City Commissioners. My name is Philip Wu with Kaiser Permanente. I've been a pediatrician for over 30 years, and I'm a member of the Oregon Pediatric Society. Thank you again for the opportunity to speak with you today about the issue of water fluoridation, and most importantly, determining the date for this referendum. I support water fluoridation, and I support setting the date for the public vote in May 2013. As a pediatrician, my primary concern is the health of all children. When we spoke with you in September, we described the dental health crisis that Oregon children are experiencing, and you did the right thing and unanimously voted in favor of adding fluoride to Portland city water. Your vote acknowledged the seriousness of this health crisis and your concern for the welfare of our kids. Now, since September, unfortunately, I'm here to tell you that nothing has changed. That crisis continues. 35% of Oregon children continue to suffer untreated decay, and one in five kids right now are suffering from rampant decay, and that's seven or more untreated cavities. Now, as a pediatrician, I want to say that it's unwise to withhold safe and effective preventive measures that have been proven over time. And as a city council, I would expect that you would want to put into place as soon as possible any safe and effective measure that helps overcome this current dental health crisis. Now, you've heard from Mel and the rest of the panel that the scientific evidence is in. There have been a bevy of scientific evaluations that have been done by expert panels and reputable organizations. So the evidence is in. The independent panel that's being recommended is a political panel. It's a panel designed to try to make some kind of a recommendation, but it is not intended and could not review the evidence. The panel in Fairbanks, Alaska, as Mel had pointed out, made a policy recommendation to a city council that probably needed the support of that panel for its own decision-making. If I'm not mistaken, I think this referendum is saying that the people of the city of Portland will make that decision and not an independent panel. So this independent panel does not have a function. It cannot review the evidence in a systematic way, and it's not going to make a policy recommendation to the people of the city of Portland. So quite frankly, I think all the arguments are on the table already. The opposition has its arguments. We've heard nothing different over the past 6 to 9 months. Our evidence and our opinions are also firm, and there's nothing new in that regard either. So basically, I would agree with all of those who say the people of Portland are smart enough to make a decision. All the evidence is there, and they can do that in 5 months.
Dr. Wu, could I ask you a question?
Yeah.
And I want to be clear, we're not here today to argue the cause of fluoride because the council has unanimously voted to fluoridate our water. And I was very clear at that hearing that I concluded from what was presented to me that it is a safe and a cost-effective and common-sense approach to promoting the public health. So we're not here today to re-argue. But one argument was made by someone who I don't think is a doctor, and I made a note of it because I think that if someone heard it out of context, they would have a concern, and I want to give you a chance to respond to it. And the argument was that it was somehow unethical for this body to vote to fluoridate the water because we had not obtained the consent, informed consent, and we were in effect introducing a drug into the system without informed consent. Could you respond to that?
Well, fluoride's not a drug.
Use your hands, folks, not your mouths.
It's not a drug. It's a nutrient.
I said use your hands, not your mouths.
And since we know there's about 200 million Americans who currently drink water that's fluoridated, and we have evidence that they do so safely, has anyone in any other debate that you're aware of made the claim that somehow the duly elected representatives of the people do not have the right to make this decision because it can somehow only be made with the, quote, consent of the consumer?
Well, not that I know of. In public health arenas, I think it's pretty widely agreed and understood that public health measures are the responsibility of policymakers. I mean, that is one of the responsibilities of government, which is to make decisions regarding public health. And so, no, I have not heard anything like that.
And if I might, the official public health board for this city, which is Multnomah County, has endorsed this measure.
Do you have more?
So I just want to make one final concluding sentence, and that is, from a public health perspective, there is nothing to be gained in delaying a public decision on whether to fluoridate Portland city water. The only people who are going to lose will be our children, because it'll be that much further down the line before we have the opportunity to put into place a preventive health measure. Thank you.
So the issue that we're discussing today is not the merits or demerits of fluoridation, it's whether to move the date. And as Commissioner Fish pointed out, would it be in the public interest to move the date? I don't understand the logic of moving the date of the referendum, given that we can't construct a fluoride plant within 1 year, and given that there will be an initiative, or there's likely going to be an initiative on fluoridation as a charter change in May of 2014. So I'm not seeing the public interest in moving this part of the debate forward, or this particular vote, rather than having both votes at the same time.
So I think I'm best to answer that, because that's a city procedural issue that involves the mechanics of actually creating a fluoridation injection system that would be located at the Lusted Hill facility that the Portland Water Bureau owns. When I met with the Portland Water Bureau after they had publicly proclaimed it would take 5 years to build a plant, and I read that. Then I read they said 4 years. This is before I discussed the issue with them. Then I actually asked to meet with them and the chief engineer to have them lay out for me the land use process, everything involved from getting a permit to building the plant. It turned into less than 18 months. Not because I told them to, but because that's what they said they could actually do it in. We cannot build or make capital improvements based on what future elections may or may not dictate. If this passes in May, this referendum, and I expect it to, I expect that the Water Bureau will begin implementing, just as they had after our September vote, the immediate land use application with the county, which we'd already begun doing. We'd already put together a team that was working on that, and we actually thought we were going to beat the deadline of 14 months. And I expect that to happen if this passes in May. So that's the reason for moving it up. In my view, this is a public health issue, a crisis, if you will, and I would argue that there makes no more sense postponing this any longer than it does to inoculate children against penicillin, and that it rises to that level.
Even in your most optimistic timeline, it would be at least a year, if not 18 months. Right. Yesterday, you argued for 3 years in the case of Washington Park.
Right.
So still,
but that's
and
a
given
different
that if this is on the ballot in 2013, wouldn't that get those 44,000 people more likely to sign the initiative for the charter referral and make it more likely that there would soon be a on the ballots in 2014? I'm just not seeing where the public interest is in discussing this for
because
17
the plant
months.
Will be up and running within I would predict, because of the work that we've already done with the county, because the team we already put together, be up and running in 12 months.
But
if we waited until May 2014, it wouldn't be up and running until May 2015.
And the cost of that plant is estimated at $5 million.
Yes.
So potentially we could have it hurry up and get implemented in 12 months at a cost of $5 million and then have the charter changed to say that we can't use it.
But I actually believe that the will of the voters will be expressed in May, and I think that once they express it, that will be the will of the voters. Opponents can come back as often as they want. We cannot make policy decisions based on what others may do with the initiative process.
The charter trumps.
But I do agree
with the electorate. No, the election, the electors trump. The citizens of Portland trump. And I believe when they hear the facts, as they've been presented here today, you can ask them 100 times and they will answer the same way 100 times when presented with the facts.
So I just wanted to clarify a point, because I was led to believe by the first panel that there had been three local scientific studies on this issue, and one was against it, and two were against it, one was for it, and the individual talking was disappointed with the objectivity of the one that was for it. And then I thought I heard one of you say that those were the two that were against it were not scientific reviews, but rather policy reviews. And so could somebody make sure that I've got this correct?
So, you know, the distinction I see is one panel that makes a recommendation about whether to fluoridate or not, which I do not consider an independent review, scientific review panel. And the other one is a scientific review panel that answers scientific questions. And the primary two questions are, is fluoride effective at reducing tooth decay? And does fluoride at optimal levels have any negative health impacts? And those, the two panels that were mentioned made recommendations. As Rick North stated, you know, NADIC, or I can't remember the exact votes, but they voted 5-1 to endorse or to not support fluoridation. That is a political recommendation, not a scientific analysis. I mentioned 14, these are 14 scientific reviews, and they answer the questions, is fluoride effective? And they all 14 say, yes, it's effective. And they answered the question, are there negative health consequences? And they all said, at optimal levels, there's no credible evidence of any health consequence.
Thank you. Thank you.
Can I, since we're on the subject, just to get the issue out, I'd like to pose a question to Commissioner Leonard. The last time outside of fluoride that I remember, we had a pretty lively discussion about the impact of some action we were going to take on water quality, including things like water pH, how it might impact local businesses that use water, how it may impact consumers, was when we were debating the requirement that we comply with a federal rule that we disagreed with, that we had to treat for cryptosporidium, which we don't have. So we had to treat a problem that doesn't exist. But we looked at a series of options.
Right.
One option on the table was a full filtration plant upstream. Another one was ultraviolet radiation. We heard from lots of people who had concerns about how that would impact the quality of our water, how it would affect our brew pubs, how it would affect public health. And I've been thinking about that a little bit because that was the last significant time I remember an issue like this came up. Council ultimately decided that were we required to comply with the rule, that we were going to opt for ultraviolet treatment, which we viewed as safe and cost-effective, the most cost-effective and safe option that did the least damage to our water. I don't remember during that debate anybody, including many of the critics, both of the rule and any treatment, urging us to convene an independent scientific inquiry to determine the impact on our water. Yet people were deeply concerned about the impact. And I just, since I don't remember, I want to put it to you because you actually shepherded that issue through.
Well, there wasn't a request, and I guess very much for the reasons we're hearing from the panel here today, there exists a plethora of analyses both of both kinds of treatment systems. And we relied on those in the recommendations that we brought forward to council, that, you know, there was no point in reinventing the wheel, much as I think the panel would characterize the latest request to have another.
Now, in fairness, ultimately we got a waiver, so the issue of a referral and a further debate wasn't germane. But I will say I'm having deja vu all over again feelings because there were lots of legitimate questions, concerns raised about impact on water, the quality, public health. But I do recall that we took the available information and made a judgment and ultimately chose ultraviolet should we be required to do that.
Right, and we had a robust debate, if you remember, from some who included concerns about the mercury that's within ultraviolet that potentially could end up in the water system. I mean, if you recall, that was an active part of our discussion. There wasn't a question as to whether or not that was an issue. We had the evidence as to what the possibilities of mercury contaminating the water, or what actions, if you remember, the Water Bureau were taken. Were we to have a contamination? What kind of plans do we have in place? And we talked about that in quite some detail.
So just if you could consider this lightning sort of round question and answer, I just want to keep the dialogue going. So an individual that testified on the first panel showed states with fluoride had an increase in tooth decay.
Well, I think the answer to that is relatively simple. There are all kinds of things that cause tooth decay. And fluoride is not a cure-all. It's not the only solution. A very simple explanation, we don't know, of course, the details of that, but a very simple answer to that particular problem would be the factor of sugar-sweetened beverages. And then, for example, was that a factor that drove up tooth decay in spite of the presence of effective levels of fluoride in the water?
Appreciate. And then European countries that don't fluoridate, including Rome, Stockholm, but have dental health that are, I assume, the inference was, the statement was, good dental health?
Yeah, I'll respond to that. One of the big issues in Europe is that they have much smaller water systems distributed around the continent, more than 1,000 water systems, and the technical issues are very much different in Europe, and versus in the U.S., they tend to have very large systems. Altogether, There's about 120 million people in Europe take in fluoridated salt. Fluoridated salt is not quite as effective as fluoridated water, but it is a good, still a good solution given their engineering constraints for improving dental health.
And then the issue that this is a sort of a new issue that has sprung up just recently, I was aware of this issue being discussed when I worked in Salem. That was a long time ago. How long has this issue been active in Oregon politics and before the state legislature, fluoridation?
It's probably from before when I was born.
And in terms of the coalition that's been put together, did that coalition come together exclusively for Portland's discussion, or had that coalition been in members of that coalition been part of the group that has also been working this legislature, working this issue down in the state legislature?
We formed the coalition to focused on improving dental health and identified fluoridation as one critical strategy and the most important strategy, in fact, for improving dental health. And we went through a process of conducting analysis around which areas are ready for the discussion around fluoridation, and we came to the conclusion that it made sense to bring the discussion to Portland.
And then last question, because I'm going to have to get one of these next month, is there isn't a problem with root canals, is there, Doctor?
Not that I know of.
All right. We're going to take a...
I'm not a dentist, but...
The first panel had 75 minutes. This panel has had 36 minutes. So we're going to take a quick compassion break and gather back together at 4:10. We have about 40 people signed up, so you can expect to have your comments at 2 minutes, and we will get to pro and con panels, and folks with kids can go first.
Here's a point of order. Before we break, could you please have Carla read the title for the 4 o'clock time certain and announce that it's moved?
Thank you. Can you please read the 4 o'clock time certain?
Item 1522, accept the minimum parking requirements for multifamily buildings, memo referencing 3 pieces of research related to parking for multifamily buildings.
Unless there's objection, this is referred back to the mayor's office. So done, we're in recess for... Let's move to January 10th.
I'm sorry, 2 p.m. Sorry, Thank you.